So, I'm curious about how you are, how it's going. And again, I want to offer some a few reflections on our theme and our practice, and hope to leave some time for maybe to hear a little bit what you're discovering. Or remembering and rediscovering, both in terms of what is supportive of settling and also what gets in the way, which I want to say a little bit about. It's not so easy. Sit down. Yeah, sounds good. Oh dear. Yeah? Okay. Is it the loudness or the okay, thank you. I'll try and speak up. Thank you. So we face difficulty of different kinds. And before I talk a bit about that, is that better? I thought I might touch again just a little bit on what samadhi is, what this factor is that we're cultivating or hoping to cultivate or building a nest so we can so it can happen. We're getting hints of, and then and just to highlight again something about the benefit of that, the power of that, because sometimes I think then again the clarity of okay, it's something like that. Then it gives us a direction and something to kind of tune into in our immediate experience. But also as a kind of inspiration, you know, because it can feel difficult and sometimes it can feel that's all it is. And so an understanding of perhaps being able to reflect on some of the benefits. It's like, you know, right. So it's worth, that's actually worth some time and effort. And in that, I find that, I don't know if this is your experience, but even a little bit of settling, a little bit of gathering, is there something wonderful about it? Something in us, you know, just a little bit. I think that's so important because we might have ideas about, you know, some of what I'm going to say, and deep and high and profound, and I'm never going to, and maybe only on retreat, and actually, that there's something of this that is really accessible to us in our, you know, in our life in the world when we learn how to attune to it. And again, as I was saying this morning, when we really know for ourselves in our own situation, our own body mind conditions, how to help ourselves settle it. Again, that the building of the nest, which I just think is so important. Now, if you just, right, I'm going for the breath. Okay, why isn't it happening? There's some other pieces here that are needed, and I was touching on some of those this morning. So the inspiration can be also, it's like patience, you know, patience. That is this, there's something here so precious and beautiful, and it's also somehow not separate from the difficulty. And that it's almost like we learn how to meet the difficulty that we experience in a different way. So, as I was saying this morning with Samadhi, you know, the image of the doll with the heavy base, and how somehow we're not so caught up in, you know, our little tentacles going out to everything and here and there and that and past and future and him and her and I want that and I don't want that. And then inwardly, I've got to get rid of that, sort that bit out. Why isn't that bit sorted yet? And how busy we can get. And how this being able to drop into a, as a well, one way in this morning of really what it is mindfulness practice. It's just not any different from that, really. it's more like what we're doing today is kind of highlighting one aspect of that process, which is about the steadying and the gathering. And well, maybe you can reflect on situations in your life, I know I can, when, you know, even a little bit of steadiness has made a big difference. It's made the difference between me, you know, bearing the situation and going out and shouting at a tree, you know, or shouting at the person. So on a very pragmatic level, I think it's like it's a support, and it's not just about kind of, you know, forcing ourselves to do something or not do something. It's like we've got this resource in ourselves that even when things are difficult inwardly, outwardly, it's like, oh, you know. Sometimes I had this image of, you know, that if it is a Russian doll, I apologize if that's wrong, but if it was the other way around, which it often is for us, isn't it, if we're really honest, we're like this. You know, this huge head, heavy head. Ideas, think, ideas, you know, do, this is good, that's bad. No wonder we keep falling over. And then the heart and the body, kind of like, we're teetering around on, you know. So I don't know if that makes any sense. To me, it's the other way around. Broad base, open heart. And then this bit, you could say the thinking bit, and then it's like it takes its place and it has its place and its uses. But we somehow, with that samadhi, we know better how to use it, yeah, rather than just having it run and trying to figure out life from, you know, that bit. Doesn't work, does it? Well, if it does, come tell me, because I don't think it works. Generally, it seems. But to be able to let that take its place in a larger sense of who we are, which is, you know, this mind, this body, this embodied mind. And so the benefits, and one teacher, Sylvia Boorstein, described it, I think, like kind of like this, like it's the samadhi factor. This gives you this kind of soft strength. It gives you this kind of emotional flexibility. She said it was like the difference between, you know, sort of something in life happens, and instead of it just going, you know, bang, it's like into something like, you know, a piece of wood or something. All those hardnesses and rigidities and tensions and holdings, you know, that we can so often feel ourselves to be, isn't it? Have you had that experience? I certainly have. I had one recently where something really, like, oh, kind of scary happened, and I could feel this tension in my body just like go even more tense, and being able to go that way instead. And then sometimes when the samadhi is stronger, I can remember another similar kind of, you know, like difficult, scary moment happening, and because I was more, it felt like it, that was the difference really, more samadhi, different impact, more like something hitting a mattress. That's Sylvia Boorstein's image. I think that's really interesting. It's a kind of, like, we, you know, it doesn't. So really, I hope that makes some sense. It's just trying to sort of highlight some of the, if you like, everyday benefits of what we might term an everyday samadhi. Really, yeah. This centeredness, isn't it? This gathered heart, mind, and body. I've got so many. I was collecting different ways that different teachers described this practice, and I've got lots of lovely ones. That one I really like is from Ajahn Suchito, who's a wonderful teacher in the Thai Forest tradition in England, and he said it's the careful collecting of oneself into the joy of the present moment. The careful collecting of oneself into the joy of the present moment. Love that. And to me then that's pointing to one of the other, you know, huge benefits of samadhi is this kind of sense in which, as it maybe, and I was sort of pointing to that this morning when I talked about pleasure and noticing what, if anything, felt okay or good. That when we start to sense this sort of inner pleasure or happiness, that actually come, it doesn't come from chocolate, you know, or curry, or any of the other things that you love, like me, like swimming. It actually comes from the mind sort of meeting itself, the mind and the body starting to kind of like, hey, okay, yeah, I'm all right, how are you? Yeah, I'm fine, okay, like you. Or this, any of these sort of, where we start to feel a kind of joy, a kind of, sometimes it's very slight. I can remember years ago when teachers talked about this, I thought, well, I don't feel any of that, you know. I think for a long time in my practice, there was so much dukkha, so much suffering, so much hardness that I could, like, they'd say, can't you find a little bit of pleasure somewhere in your body? And I go, no. And sometimes it can feel like that. We're just so heavy and full up with depression. It's like, no, I'm sorry. But okay, if you say so, yeah, maybe one day. So, you know, you have to see that. I think for me, you know, it's become more and more accessible. So again, in terms of the benefits, again, for some of us, it's over years that this becomes actually more, and more accessible. And how much that softens all the I want and I don't want and go away and I wish I had that, I wish I hadn't done that, and what about next week, and oh dear, and that it sort of gives us, a centeredness, a kind of refuge, like an inner refuge. You can, all that, yeah. And we have that. We don't have it, but we can, can know, we can access some centeredness. Anyway, so the last really big benefit I want to say a little bit about, big topic, not much time, is the way in which samadhi is a key condition for the arising of insight. So if we're looking, well, why do this? You know, it's not so easy. Why do this? And the benefits that, in terms of the Buddha's teachings of awakening and liberation, there's a way in which the samadhi, along with all these other factors of mindfulness, investigation, calm, and so on, equanimity, that they cohere to, doesn't it make sense as somehow you're less busy with this and that and past and future and him and her? It's like your energy or intelligence is actually available for investigation, for seeing, for reflecting, for remembering what is true, and for some surprising new revelations to occur. Maybe that's happened to some of you, where you're just walking along, doing your mindfulness of walking, minding your own business, and just doing that, and suddenly some profound insight into impermanence arises that, you know, makes a huge difference, not just in that moment, but in your life. And these are the insights that the Buddha is talking about, which are the kind of seeing and understanding of experience where we are able to unhook from the sense of what we know, what we've decided, what we've concluded about us and what happened and how it's got to be like this and it isn't, and all of the whole sort of storying and narrative and beliefs and structures and all that we work on and struggle with, that somehow we have more access to sort of dropping down. And it's this image sometimes I use of like going down into the ocean beneath the surface waves of experience and feeling and finding and knowing a sense of the ocean that we are. Not just seeing it as waves, but actually beginning to know it as currents and energies shifting and perceptions arising and passing. And it's a lot to do with a sense of flux and flow and change and a kind of again, it's a sense of openness towards experience. Or, you know, I love the way Stephen Batchelor talks about this kind of perplexity. You know, sometimes I say, what is going on? What is actually happening? What is this existence? You know, what is life? But actually sort of opening to that way of seeing, that way of questioning, that way of knowing or opening to experience, where it's just not so clear. It's uncertain. It's anicca, a lovely Pali word. So the Buddha is saying, maybe you get a sense of that today, and when you close your eyes and you kind of like go into the more and more the experience of the body. You know, what's actually going on? What is that? The actual experience of that. When we kind of, I think with the eyes open mode, it's just so easy for us to get locked into, you know, me, you, this, that, kind of object, subject kind of relation. So that sometimes I think to be able to, it's mindfulness really, isn't it? It's like life isn't mindfulness. That's all there is. I have to think about that. I didn't plan to say that, but something to think about. Yeah. So there's a sense of inquiry and investigation that starts to be almost like more important than anything. We say, well, that's that and that's that and that goes over there, and you know, and there's a kind of joy in that. I think there's a kind of peacefulness in that. And there's a kind of, I think, coming back into the world of people and things and jobs and tasks. And it's like with that perspective, and there's a practice. You know, it's a way of beginning, can we see people as impermanent? And can I see you? I know you're in this very moment, you're changing, you know, in every single way. Because if we don't do that, we tend to fix people, don't we? I know you. You know, you're like that. I'm like this. And actually to really look at people, I think this is it's quite a challenge. It's radical. You look and see this. You know, this person's going to die. I'm going to die. What does that do? Where does that take you? Interesting. So the samadhi, it opens up a level of understanding, of inquiry that is not just reading the books. Okay, oh yeah, you know, impermanence, yeah. Okay, got that one. What's next? Right? It's so easy to do. I mean, you know, and you could read all the books in the world about, you know, Buddha, Dharma, and be none the wiser, as far as I'm concerned. Unfortunately, I think that's really possible. I think I did that for a while. And it's, again, not to... I don't want to diss learning and study, because I love it and I continue to do it, but I more and more value the application. The application. And so just to wave a flag, you know, in terms of the benefits of samadhi for this deep seeing into things, into the nature of our experience and nature of life. That's a whole other retreat, isn't it? So I did want to say a little bit about, or just kind of acknowledge this sense of what hinders. You know, a lot of you know the hindrances. It's not this one of the wonderful lists of Buddha offered of ways of understanding how we get hooked and caught and stuck and resistant, and what is going on in the mind when we feel like we just want to run out of the room screaming, you know, or just slip away and get an ice cream, you know, or or just disappear in our own mind and think about planning our holiday next summer, you know. I don't know, maybe, you know, we could. Or just feeling caught into that anguish, sort of self, something self. You know, I know of sort of something that's wrong with us or in our life, you know, and we get completely caught in that. So hindrance or something that obscures, you know, that level of seeing that's so much more true or liberating, or that we can't see because we just, our vision, our understanding is obscured in some way. And it's also talked about as defilement. Well, that's a very medieval term. You know, the ways in which every single one of us gets caught in greed, you know, in irritation, in aggression. And I think I wanted to bring this up because there's a way in samadhi practice, or in when you're emphasizing that, that you can actually just note difficulty as difficulty. Like, it's all you need to know. You don't need to know anything else. You touch it with tenderness, with sort of gentleness, with unpleasantness, knowing it as that. And then the skillfulness of being able to soften and widen and just include that. And somehow, again, this is a certain type of way of skillfully working with what's difficult, that you're giving something the space. It's like the energy of that. I sometimes see these kilesas, these hindrances, little tight knots of energy, and go and lodge here, you know, in our solar plexus or in our shoulders or in our belly, and they're just like that, and they don't, and all they really need is again maybe some holding, like touching gently, hello tension, hello knot, and then space, or just allowing, and then it starts to, in its own time, in its own way, it's just unravel and soften and dissolve, and that's all we need to know about it, right? So just to, as it's not the only way of working with hindrances and difficulties, but I think it's, because we can so easily get caught up in our story, and I've got this, and I've got this anger problem, and this is my sadness, and it's because of that, and that at certain times, in certain situations, that kind of approach is incredibly important and helpful in terms of respecting and honoring and having compassion for the conditions in our life that have created suffering in us. Right? And there is something quite remarkable and radical here, that there's the possibility of changing, of transformation happening, of the past being healed in how we relate to what is actually presenting itself in the present. Right? I want to say that again because I think it's so important. It's something I first learned from Christina Feldman, and I just feel like it's so, what, that the past can be healed in the way we meet and see and understand what is presenting itself in the present. So one of the wonders of this is that any experience in any moment is an opportunity for awakening and healing. Isn't that amazing? And this is like one of the things that the Buddha's pointing to on that level. And I think this also translates so much to our world, to our political situation, our ecological situation. Look, you know, we can get so despairing about things, can't we? Almost like quite rightfully or righteously despairing. But to be able to, you know, bring that sense of what needs to be healed in terms of all the forces of greed and hatred and delusion that just like bringing us to this point. And then it's like using our practice to strengthen our capacity and our faith and our strength to be able to actually meet that in ways that are actually helpful. Isn't this empowering and encouraging? It's kind of, we can do that. We can do that in our own sort of, if you like, with our own personal, you know, stuff, experience. But we can also do it in our relationships, in our families, and I don't know about you, but I have difficult relationships in my life, difficult in various ways. And almost invariably, I find that when I can go into that situation and meet that person with a sense of openness and, okay, can I really open to just what's here now? Not what happened last week, you know, what I want to happen tomorrow. But just it's so powerful, so powerful. There's something about that that, yeah, and something new or different can arise from within us, from within another person. So, I was going to say more about hindrances. But I'd also really like to open, maybe let's see if there are any questions or comments. So I'd like to offer maybe three questions that I find very helpful. And I think they're relevant to our, you know, when we sit in meditation and we're meeting some difficulty, and they're relevant in situations in life. And they can help to, again, move us into that more open space where we don't know and we feel our, some degree, our center, our centeredness. And we can have that as a, you know, as a support. And we actually allow the question to help open space. And then rather than just fill it with the next thought, the next action, we wait. We wait. And again, this is the power of samadhi that can help us to wait, because it has weight in a way. It kind of helps again to sort of ballast in the mind. There's another image of a ship going like this in the sea. And the samadhi is like ballast, keeps the boat a bit more steady in the water. So the first question is, what is actually happening right now? What is actually happening right now? So, second question, what am I unwilling to feel? What am I unwilling to feel? And that very interesting question to take into time of difficulty. What am I unwilling to feel? Again, just something for you to take with you if you wish. And the third question is kind of two questions, but what am I believing here? Is it true? You know, and for me, that pair of questions almost always exposes some view that I'm holding on to and then invites me to challenge it. I go, no, I don't want to challenge it. I want to hold on to that. So what am I believing? Is that true? So maybe, so much more, but maybe lastly, I wanted to mention the jhanas or the meditative absorptions, which is a way that samadhi can deepen and develop for some of us in some conditions. And I think, you know, it comes up in the Buddha's teachings as a very, very important part of what right samadhi is, and that I hope that it's helpful to kind of relate to these, as well as relating to them as discrete states, so the mind can deepen into, and become stiller and stiller and more happy. That it also refers to, as I've been kind of emphasizing today, a kind of continuum of steadiness, of gatheredness into some degree of gatheredness into some degree of well-being. And that wherever we want to put that on some, you know, measuring scale, to value what we can cultivate and the little bit maybe that we, you know, that we have access to really value that. And also just to the possibility for some of us at times on retreat for this to go very deep, for the mind to go into absorbed states that are sort of, you know, we're not in Kansas anymore. That's quite interesting, quite a non-ordinary state, you could say, where the mind is extremely refined and is tuned into an extremely subtle level of consciousness. So it's very accessible, but often it needs particular conditions like retreat for us to actually explore and cultivate that. But I want to mention it because it seems it's so important in the Buddha's teaching, again, that it's this depth that we can touch which actually enables us to... It makes us more available for insight, for doing something differently on a very pragmatic level, because we've visited a place where our mind is not so familiar and we're not so caught in its usual patterns of thinking and identification and who I am and who you are. And coming back from that, I think, whoa, you know, things are a bit more open. Very open, even free, you know, free. We're freer from the belief and entrapment in all or any of the ideas about who we think we are. So I think I will stop there. I hope there's some help or interest or coherence in that, Yeah, just there's a bit of time if anybody wanted to say anything or ask anything about any of that. Or we'll also have a little bit of time at the end of the day, but equally doesn't have to be. Thank you. Very good lesson for probably most of us. Yeah, the hare and the tortoise. Yeah. you. Yeah, maybe just one thing to sort of just clarify a bit further, that the focus, the concentration, the sort of that part of it is the way samadhi's talked about. It's like that's one of the elements of it, you know. And actually, it also talks about the joy and the sukha, the happiness, and the well-being. But that somehow through having the word concentration as the translation as sort of picked out and highlighted and sort of emphasized that aspect. And I feel like, yeah, there's a lot to be regathered, reintegrated about what actually the process that includes all this other stuff about joy and well-being. And anyway, yeah, what you said it very well.
I'm good at tasks, but the idea that it's just kind of more of a kind of a well-being sort of available.
Yeah.
And it, you know, when I looked for it, I found it. I read it in a book, and I looked for it, and I found it, mm-hmm. and I was surprised. Mm-hmm. And I love that, because it makes it less of a, I have to find this, and more like, I can just sit here and know it. And
So I'd like to finish these reflections we've been sharing with a poem, one of my favourite poems. Seems relevant somehow to where we've been going. Some of you may know it. It's called Wild Geese by Mary Oliver. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert, repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things.